a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Human Services Committee will now come to order. I want to welcome everybody that's here today. Want to bring to your attention that if you do have a cell phone on you, make sure that you mute it or shut it off. If it does go off while you're in my room here for the next couple hours, you will be kindly making a donation to the Brookings Boys and Girls Club of $25. So I'll thank you in advance for those of you that are really want to donate to the Boys and Girls Club of Brookings, and they'll appreciate it. With that, we'll have the secretary call the roll.
Representatives Campbell.
Here.
Consett.
Here.
DeSanto.
Here.
Greenfield.
Here.
Haugard.
Here.
Holmes.
Here.
McCleary.
Here.
Sly.
Here.
Soli.
Here.
Woman.
Here.
Hickey. Munsterman.
Here.
Hey, we have 12.
Very good. We have a quorum. I would entertain a motion to approve the minutes from the last meeting.
So moved.
Second. There's a motion by Representative Consett, seconded by Representative Sly to approve last meeting's minutes. Any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And opposed? Minutes are approved. Again, welcome today. We've got three bills up, and welcome to our internet listeners, by the way. I'll get to those in just a second. We do have, it looks like, one page here with us this morning. Would you kindly come up and turn the mic on, tell us who you are, where you're from, and what your vision is for your life?
I'm John Haugard from Sioux Falls, and I'll probably go to Sioux Falls for criminal justice somewhere.
Very good. It's great to have you with us. If you have any information to be distributed, make sure that it goes through the page to the committee. That's the normal procedure. If there's any questions, they get directed through the chair. We do have three bills up. There are two, though, that have been asked to be deferred, and I just wanted to address those because if there's somebody that's been here for those, I want to make sure that we take them, get your testimony, and all that. And so the first one would be House Bill 1166 has been asked to be deferred, which I've granted, I believe, to next Thursday, is it? Is there anybody that came here to testify in House Bill 1166 today? I mean, that you're here today to testify on that? Because I think we got that notice out.
But I'm here,
so. But you're okay for next Thursday? Okay. Okay, very good. And then Senate Bill 60 was asked to be moved as well to next week. Is there anybody here that came to testify in Senate Bill 60? Okay, very good. So I think we got everything in order. And so that leaves us with House Bill 1089, which we'll go ahead and get started, and that's to ban the practice of female genital mutilation in the state, to provide a penalty therefor, and to declare an emergency. And so we will go ahead with proponent testimony for House Bill 1089. And good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Lynn DeSanto. I represent District 35 here in Pierre. And I appreciate you taking the time to learn a little bit about this procedure and for us to discuss this bill. Female genital mutilation is an abhorrent practice of removing part or all of the external female genital organs for cultural and non-medical reasons. It is practiced in 29 countries around the world. FGM, as it is abbreviated, is done with the goal of inhibiting a woman's sexual feeling. The removal of the female genitalia is not limited to any certain group, although it is commonly practiced on girls between the ages of 4 and 10 years old. The practice of FGM is also becoming more popular in infants, some who are only a couple days or weeks or months old. More than 125 million women have been the victims of FGM in some way. Unlike male circumcision, which has health benefits, removing the female genitalia is considered a violation of human rights and has no medical reason. With this bill, FGM would be considered a Class 4 felony. What does that mean? That means a person could face up to 10 years imprisonment, as well as a fine of $20,000 may be imposed. FGM is currently a federal crime. Making it a crime in South Dakota adds an important and greater level of protection for the victim. This statute will not add any additional burden on the system, as it will be prosecuted using the current system that already addresses child abuse. Some have asked me, does this take freedom away from people? And everyone knows I'm a big proponent of freedom. I believe that when you harm a child, your freedom ends. And this is a crime against children. I've also been asked, is it insulting to the people, to other cultures? Is it offensive? And what my response to that is, if a woman is 18 years old and for cultural reasons would like to have this done, this bill does not remove that opportunity for her. What we're asking is that for children between the ages of 4 and 10, which is when it's currently done, or anyone under the age of 18, that this is no longer acceptable in the state of South Dakota. In addition, I would like to point out that our neighboring states already have this as a state law. Having a statute in South Dakota will keep South Dakota from becoming a state that people come to in order to carry out this dangerous procedure, since it is already illegal in our neighboring states. I will now defer to some additional testimony.
Very good. Thank you very much. Further proponent testimony for House Bill 1089. Proponent testimony. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Terry Jorgensen. I'm a volunteer lobbyist with Concern Women for America, a Legislative Action Committee. The war on women and young girls through female genital mutilation, which is a barbaric act, is born out of ignorance. By passing HB 1089 to ban it, we raise awareness in an effort to stop it. We must defend those who cannot defend themselves. We encourage South Dakota to stand with 22 other states that have outlawed this torturous procedure, a procedure often carried out in deplorable, unsanitary conditions with crude instruments such as scissors, razor blades, broken glass, and sharpened stones. Although we can't know the number of young girls living in South Dakota who have been victims of FGM, we do know refugees are coming into our state from countries that practice this horrific procedure. Of course, numbers can never capture the heartbreak of FGM. That story is best told through the voice of a victim and survivor. One such person is Waris Jerry, who is a former international fashion model with humble beginnings. Waris started her life as the daughter of a goat herder in the desert region of Somalia. She was fortunate to survive FGM at age 5, unlike her sister, who bled to death from this barbaric act. Now Waris has made it her mission to save young girls from FGM. In an interview with the online news magazine, News One, she shared insights on why laws against it are important and how it can be stopped. Waris explains that many countries have adopted stricter laws against FGM, especially in Africa and Europe. While laws alone are not enough, they are an important message showing parents that what they are doing is not okay, and that it is, in fact, illegal. She goes on to say that, first of all, communities need to be educated in the fact that FGM is not prescribed by any religion and it is not part of a culture. It is a pure human rights violation, and that is how it needs to be dealt with. Concerned Women of America echoes Waris's cry that female genital mutilation is not okay. Let's make it clear that this practice is unlawful and allow victims every protection available. Yearly, on average, our state receives about 550 refugees, and that number is actually a little higher, because what happens is we have about around 450 that come into the Sioux Falls area, and they are coming from these states that actually practice FGM, some of them. And then we also have an additional 80 to 100 that are coming into Huron. And then on top of that, there's another 200 that are coming in from other states. And that could be California or any of the other states that are coming into to South Dakota. So we don't know what the actual number is, but we know that those that are coming in, that it is practiced in some of those countries. So those women and children, they're seeking better lives. Let's help the victims among them to leave behind the scars of FGM and offer them a brighter future, one that protects their human dignity. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony for House Bill 1089, proponent testimony. Good morning.
Good morning. Chairman Munsterman, committee, I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to discuss why House Bill 1089 is important to the state of South Dakota. My name is Amy Wilson. I am the Administrative Assistant for Family Heritage Alliance in Rapid City. I've also served as a licensed registered nurse for over 10 years. Four of those years were spent as a nurse for Youth and Family Services, where children's health focus, where children's health was my focus. As you know, FGM stands for female genital mutilation and is the partial or total removal of the female external genitalia or other injury to the female genital organs for non-medical reasons. As immigration increases across our state and our country, so does the risk and occurrence of FGM. A research done or conducted by the African Women's Health Center of the Brigham and Women's Hospital found that approximately 228,000 women and girls in the U.S. have either suffered the procedure or are at risk, a number that had increased approximately 35% between 1990 and 2000. FGM is most prevalent in communities based in Africa and the Middle East, but it is not confined to distant shores. Typically, girls in the U.S. are most affected by FGM if they are part of a community originally from a country where FGM is culturally acceptable. Female genital mutilation is often carried out to reinforce traditional notions of femininity, and mutilation is viewed to be essential to the initiation of girls into womanhood. Female genital mutilation is also performed to cleanse or purify girls and women of past action that are socially unacceptable to their communities. Some communities also believe that female genital mutilation physically differentiates women from men. FGM is typically a strict requirement for marriage in the communities where it is practiced, in part because FGM is seen as ensuring premarital virginity and marital fidelity, both which are highly prized and carefully policed. In many societies that practice FGM, women are viewed as the gatekeepers of family honor, and female genital mutilation is thought to bring greater social value, status, respectability, and honor, not only to the girls undergoing the procedure, but their family members. Girls and women who have undergone FGM report physical complications, which include bleeding, delayed or incomplete healing, and infections. Also, many suffer from depression, anxiety, memory loss, and post-traumatic stress disorder. Long-term consequences are more difficult to attribute, but may include damages to adjacent organs, sterility, recurring urinary tract infections, formation of dermoid cysts, and even death. Birth complications may also arise, leading to an excessive bleeding during delivery and an increased need for C-sections. Death rates among infants increase by 15% for mothers with type 1, which is a clitorectomy or partial or total removal of the clitoris, by 32% for type 2, which is partial or total removal of the clitoris and inner labia, with or without removal of the labia, and 55% for type 3, infibulation, removal, external female genitalia, and the sealing or narrowing of the vaginal opening. And that's according to a 2013 Sanctuary for Families report. Also in that report, girls and women aged between 15 and 49 in the year 2006 from Somalia had an estimated FGM risk of 97.9%. That same study estimated the number of girls at risk for FGM by U.S. states and found South Dakota to have a total number of 1,344 women and children at risk. Each year, girls are exposed to FGM through a growing phenomenon called vacation cutting, in which families send their daughters abroad to undergo the procedure, typically during their school vacations. Vacation cutting is sometimes used by parents as a way of tempering the influence of American culture. HB 1089 includes language to address the prohibiting of transportation of a girl out of state for the purposes of FGM elsewhere, and also prohibits FGM in all forms. HB 1089 will also add an additional layer of protection that can work in conjunction to already existing federal laws, which will ensure the highest level of protection for our children. To date, FGM is a crime in 23 states, and those include North Dakota, Minnesota, and Colorado. This bill is a proactive response to a growing silent threat. I believe it's vital that we take this opportunity to better protect our girls from this horrific practice in the state.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
further testimony on House Bill 1089? Proponent testimony, that is. We are on proponent testimony. Good morning.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Mark Chase, president of the South Dakota Family Policy Council. The World Health Organization recognizes FGM is recognized internationally as a violation of the human rights of girls and women. It reflects deep-rooted inequality against the sexes and constitutes an extreme form of discrimination against women. Not too many years ago in our state, you would ask, if you were just go on the streets and ask somebody, do we have in our state human trafficking? Not in our state, not in South Dakota. You go on the streets today and say, do we have a problem with FGM in our state? No, we don't. Yes, we do. We do have this, and we rise today in support. You've heard enough today, and we ask that you would support this bill. Thank you very much.
Further proponent testimony for House Bill 1089. Is there further proponent testimony? Seeing none, is there opponent testimony for House Bill 1089? Opponent testimony? Any opponent testimony? Very good. Seeing none, we'll move on to committee questions. Representative Hickey.
Well, I have a question for Ms. DeSanto. You've said, and others have said, this is a cultural thing. I'd like clarification on whether or not it's also a religious thing. If so, which religions are talking about that? And the follow-up question is there a way to spin this as a infringement on religious freedom? And I might have one other.
Sure. Go ahead.
I might need to defer the question. What I can tell you is that it's not just practiced in one area of the world. It is practiced in throughout various areas of the world. In the African countries as well as Middle Eastern countries. So Amy probably could answer the question better related to what religion.
And then you can just state your name again.
Amy Wilson.
Thank you.
Okay. Chairman Munsterman, as regard to religion, In this book here, this is the UNICEF report. It's a 2013 report that came out. It's probably one of the most essential ones done on FGM. FGM is practiced in all three religions of the monotheistic faith. It's not just Islam that practices it. In here, there's a statistic that shows that in that area, Roman Catholics have practiced it, Coptic Christians have, and even Judaism in some parts have practiced it. However, the most where it is practiced is through Islam, and that seems to be the highest prevalence is through Islam.
Representative Hickey, I'll allow you latitude for follow-ups, or are you that answered it? Oh, wow. That's pretty good.
I'll come back to it.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Further committee questions? Representative Konza?
I'd like to add answer, actually, to his second part. Is this going to be seen as an infringement on religious rights?
It is so culturally. I do not believe that it is, because it's more cultural is not an excuse for abuse. And because it's through all three different religions, I mean, I was really surprised to see Roman Catholics in some of the areas were higher than Islam, you know, which I can, if you would like to have this, you can. However, in Islam, in the law itself, in Sharia law, it does have written in their prayer, it's a ritual for prayer rites. But not all... if you look at all the Islamic countries, it's only in certain areas that FGM is prevalent. There's many imams that come out against it and say that this is wrong. So it's not a continuation in Islam saying that it is. There's very much differentiate between themselves whether they believe that it is and in which degree of it. But it is written in Sharia law. But we don't recognize Sharia law. The Constitution and Sharia law, they cannot coexist. One is based on freedom and one is on subjugation. And so even though in some areas it says it's obligatory for this to happen. Not all of them practice it. Many of them stand up against it. If you look at, like, Iraq, there's only portions in Iraq, and that's more where culturally tribal mentality comes into it, where people are more poor and less educated. And so, therefore, the only way to have status is to do what the tribe does, and this is highly regarded for your dowry for families. So I hope that answered.
Follow up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, no. Do you know of any cases? I mean, I understand what you're saying culturally, but I'm talking legally, and I think if we don't ask this question in the public forum about the right of religion, because we, as myself as a Christian, hold that very highly, do you know of any court cases where this has been argued in the U.S.? I guess I don't feel like we've answered that question legally.
I do not know of any court cases, but I do know that out of all the religions, Islam is the only one that has a legal code with it as separate. And this is part of more that legal code, but it's very much discrepancy between them. There are many imams that come out against it and say this is not right culturally. So,
thank you.
You bet.
Further committee questions? Representative Sly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The statement was made with Representative Santo, but anyone can answer it. I heard that it's currently a federal crime, and is the this is proposing a Class 4 felony, and what is it at the federal level, and why would we need a state law on top of a federal law?
Ms. Wilson, would you?
I can probably answer Amy Wilson.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I can answer probably partial of that. Through many of the research that's been done, just having a federal law is not enough. You need robust, layered laws to help protect. One of the reasons is education's not getting out and the laws not being enforced federally. So the more stronger laws that you can have, the more protection you're going to have for these ladies. Because law enforcement and different areas of government have not focused on showing people what to look for. And so it's not being surfaced enough to really identify. So the more layers you can have is better for protection of each individual. And it also allows for stronger witnessing testimony. It gives the courts more ability to counter witness and talk to the parents to kind of, I guess I can't think of the word, but it helped witness testimony.
Follow-up, Representative Sly.
Yes. Actually, it's a continuation of the first question. As far as Class 4 felony at the federal level, what would it be?
That I don't know.
My understanding...
Okay. You can come on up to the mic. Former Representative Hager, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. All-Powerful Chairman. State Senator Jenna Hager, prime sponsor on the Senate side. My understanding is that the felony is very similar. I wish that I were a lawyer, that you had one on your committee. It might be possibly true that federal law is worded differently, so it might not be called a Class 4 felony, but the imprisonment and fine is similar or the same.
Okay, further questions, committee questions? Thank you very much. All right, seeing none, we're going to close public testimony and the public hearing portion of this and move on to committee discussion and or action. Representative Consett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for bringing this bill. Unlike anybody here that gave testimony, I have firsthand friends, a friend that this has happened to. So I'd like to add another layer to that. This abhorrent procedure that happens to girls, in most cases, it's forced on them. It is a cultural issue. And though I'm not a big fan of legislating culture, I did find that the lack of legality or the legal knowledge that was brought to the committee, it was a bit distressing. So I'm just going to throw another log on the fire and say it's an abhorrent practice, and having dealt with it on a personal level, I am for this bill.
Further discussion and or action, Representative Hickey?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I move do pass.
I second.
There's a motion by Representative Hickey for do pass, seconded by, was it Representative Greenfield? Thank you very much. Discussion on that motion.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. It probably didn't take three proponents to bring any of us around on this bill. It's a simple human rights bill. I do appreciate the clarifications on the religious liberty issues. Those are very important to me. I think the answer was very clear that this crosses religions. It's mostly a cultural issue. And I hate to throw in this one, but a comparable to me is that in the abortion issue, which I fight with some vigor, there's a sector of Christianity that's claiming that as a religious liberty issue as well. And this, to me, feels similar to that. I think we should keep knives away from women unborn, 10 years old, 18 years old, and, easy bill to pass. Thank you.
Further discussion on the motion, Representative Helgard.
Yes, it is a federal offense under 18 U.S.C. Section 116. It's a Class D felony, which is just 5 years. Ours is a little more stringent than that, but it's already codified in federal law, and the language is quite similar. But I agree with the proponent testimony that it's appropriate to have it on a state level as well. Many offenses in federal law are reflected in state law and vice versa, so it's appropriate to do that. And also there's the issue of having additional authorities who can prosecute these actions. If federal court chose not to do it, we can certainly do it at a state level. And the abuse and neglect statute certainly fit. And I do think it's appropriate the provisions for removing someone from the state to do it, although you'd have a terrible time proving that, yeah, I think it's appropriate to have it. So I certainly support the bill.
And I'll just chime in here. We do have a prison jail population cost estimate statement on the bill, which we were waiting for before we heard the bill. And I'll just read it to you. This act describes a crime that, if prosecuted, could result in a prison or jail sentence. To date, there have been no prosecutions for female genital mutilation under federal law, and only one in the 22 states that currently have a ban. As a result, a violation and prosecution in South Dakota is likely to be rare. Therefore, the impact on prison or jail populations is estimated to be low, and so they don't even put a dollar amount, on this. So from the financial perspective, for what it's worth, that's that you are notified of that. So any further discussion on the motion? We have a due pass motion. Representative Hickey, further discussion?
Yeah, I have a further question, because did that come to our desk yesterday?
No, it actually came just now.
Oh, okay. Can I see it again? If I heard you right, it says, to date, there have been no prosecutions for FGM under federal law. I heard in the testimony there's 228,000 women in the U.S. I'm assuming most of those might have happened elsewhere, but that would seem like they're not pursuing this issue. Thank you.
Okay. Further discussion on the motion? Representative McCleary.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As having a daughter that lives in Minnesota, I guess I have to acknowledge that Minnesota has already passed one of this nature. But if you get Minneapolis, St. Paul, you have just a wide array of cultural, religious, and types of things that are going to come before individuals there and, at the Capitol. So that's, I guess, what would lean me towards a do pass vote on this. If they can deal with that down there and evidently have, then I think that should reflect on us on a positive note. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman. Further discussion, Representative Helgard.
Yes, just an additional point. There are lots of practices in various religions, such as the voodoo religion, which is prevalent in the southern states and in certain areas, and also the Satanic Church, which has been prevalent in throughout the United States for decades. And they have some bizarre practices and commit crimes in the midst of those practices, and they certainly aren't legal. It's just trying to prove those situations. But it's not a religious liberty issue. It's an abuse neglect type of issue. So religious liberties don't come into play, and it'd be a hard sell for anybody to try to make that point.
Very good. Any further discussion on the motion? We have before us a Did I see a hand go up? Representative Greenfield, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to mention, you know, I'm glad that this was brought forth, because any sick practice can be put into a religious form. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's a religion, it's a cult. And sometimes you can find willing people to follow that cultish thinking. And I think we need to do as much as we can as a governmental body to stop such practices until these people send a message to them that, no, we do not accept this. And I believe it was Ms. Wilson that said something about that this is a tradition, getting women or prepared into womanhood. But then she also mentioned that at the age of 4, this practice is done. I would hate to think, I mean, to me, that's very bizarre to think that somebody age 4 should be prepared for womanhood. So thank you for bringing this forth.
Very good. Further discussion on House Bill do pass motion. Representative Hickey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize for 3. I should have more coffee before I show up. I wanted to just make the point that if from my vantage point, I don't speak for anyone else here, especially not for those who brought the bill, although I did co-sponsor it. In no way is there anything in me that would see this as an anti-immigration, you know, pushback? And so, you know, to see people coming into our state, I'm not hostile to that. And I hope that we can be a welcoming place for those who come from troubling places and countries. And in this small practice, I hope that we can make their lives even better.
Very good. I want to make sure everybody had a chance to say what they want to say. Any further discussion on the motion? We have a do pass motion on 1089 before us. Secretary, please call the roll.
Representatives Campbell.
Aye.
Consett.
Aye.
DeSanto.
Aye.
Greenfield.
Aye.
Haugard.
Aye.
Holmes.
Aye.
McCleary.
Aye.
Sly.
Aye.
Soli.
Aye.
Woman.
Aye.
Hickey.
Aye.
Munsterman.
Aye.
We have 12 yeas.
House Bill 1089 moves to the House floor with the due pass motion, recommendation. Very good. That is the end of our bills today. And I just want to say one more time, was there anybody here that House Bill 1166 was asked to be deferred? And if there's somebody that came out of town to come testify on that, we certainly would love to have you come forward and do that. So is there anybody here for 1166 that is out of town that came specifically to testify on that? Okay, and then also Senate Bill 60 was asked to be deferred. There were key testimonies that were not able to make it on the date. So anybody here for Senate Bill 60 that is out of town? Okay, very good. That's it for this morning. Just so you know, we're waiting for some bills to come. We're not sure if we will have bills on Tuesday or not, but I'll let you know, or one of us will let you know here if we have a meeting on Tuesday. So with that, I would entertain a motion to adjourn. Moved by Representative McCleary, seconded by Representative Hickey. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And opposed? Very good. Have a great day.